You need to surround yourself with good mentors to start off with. People who are in your corner, who you can go to when you hit situations that you're not sure about how to handle. Because if you're new in leadership, you're going to experience that a lot. So get someone in your corner who's going to be in your corner.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for Real Estate Industry Sales Professionals, Property Managers and Leaders. With thanks to our partner, Connect Now, Elevate brings you the best tools, thinking and strategies to elevate your results. To download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts, visit EliteAgentElevate.com. And for more information about how Connect Now can make moving easier on your clients, visit connectnow.com.au. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate podcast, where we delve into some of the most interesting minds in business and in real estate for the very best tips and strategies for you to implement to elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent and host of this week's show. Joining me today is director of Harcourt's Move and founder of Links Fiji. Welcome to the show, Sardna Smiles.
Thank you for having me. How are you?
Amazing. So for those of you who have tuned in, Sardna and I recently did a podcast swap, which we called Run Into the Chaos, and now the shoe's on the other foot and I will be asking the questions.
And you know what? You haven't given me what the questions are. I didn't give them to you either. So this is... Sorry. I'm holding my breath.
I think you'll be fine. Look, you and I go back a long way. So let's go back to the very beginning. Your start in real estate, did you choose real estate or did real estate choose you?
It's a really good question. I chose real estate because it was the only job that was offered to me at the time as a receptionist at an agency called Hill & Parkinson & Hawthorne that doesn't exist anymore, although I have bumped into their directors there from time to time. And I think they were desperate as much as I was for a job. They gave it to me. I lasted in that role for a very short period of time because I was really bad at it, and then sort of kind of moved through the real estate careers that way.
Yeah. And so how many years in real estate now?
I think it's about 34.
That's pretty good. And is there a role that you've enjoyed more than any other?
There's a couple of roles I've enjoyed. And in the beginning of my career, there's a group of girls I worked with in East Melbourne in the days where, you know, every Friday night was drinks and cards. And so we literally sat in this kitchen upstairs. Paula Croft and Mel Melinda are still in real estate, but we would sit there on little tables and drink till about 7, 8 o'clock at night and then drive home and play cards. It was just what we did. Probably they're my nicest memories. And then the CEO role, I was really proud of everything that I achieved in the role in Harcourts Victoria for a whole range of things, from financial to the not-for-profit side was Walk a Mile. So that's probably the two ones that I'm – one was for fun, the other one was for pride.
Yeah, so let's talk about Walk a Mile, because you managed to get a whole bunch of burly real estate agent blokes into heels. What was the thinking behind that?
That goes back to Melbourne in 2012-13, when a young girl by the name of Jill Maher was murdered, and it became a really turning point for women in Melbourne, because I think it was the first time it was a horrific crime. Everyone just assumed it was the husband and it wasn't. And I think for the first time, women in Melbourne galvanised and said, you know, enough is enough. We need to be able to walk our streets and be safe. And I was one of those women, and I felt that we could make a statement as a company. And the statement was that, you know, we say no to violence against women. And when I went to my board and said, hey, here's my idea, they looked at me and said, yep, you finally have gone mad, but if you think you can get a whole bunch of early real estate men to do it, good luck. And you know that we started off in Melbourne, and the franchisees in Melbourne were fantastic. No one ever questioned it. They all said, yep, totally agree. This is atrocious. What can we do to help? And I remember the first time we did it, and we were standing in South Bank, and I was talking to my EA at the time, Sharon, saying to her, no one's going to turn up. This is going to be a disaster. No one's going to turn up. We've done all of this. Nothing's going to happen. There's this sea of Harcourts people started to walk towards us. And it was just the, you know, moment that you never forget. And we did it for 7 years. Really, you know, I think had a big impact in the culture of our business as well, particularly in Victoria. And something, you know, you never stay in a company forever, but certainly a legacy that I'll be very proud of within this brand.
And you've done a lot in not-for-profit over the years as well, like both in the real estate industry and outside the real estate industry. So tell us a bit about Links Fiji and the work that you've done over there.
So Lynx, I was born in Fiji, for those of you who don't know, but Lynx Fiji was a foundation I set up in 2008. It is designed to help women in rural areas of Fiji. So many of your listeners would have been to Fiji on holidays and stayed in fancy hotels. That's not where we go to. We go to all the outlying islands where there is no healthcare and no support. And cervical cancer is the biggest killer of women in Fiji. And then secondly is breast cancer. And so what we do is we take all the equipment and we test women in rural areas for both cervical cancer and breast cancer. And if they are found positive, we get them treated in the city hospitals. And we at the moment are trying to, before COVID hit, we're trying to do an MOU with the Fiji government to have their support to go and do more and more of these.
Amazing work and an amazing program because, yeah, I think sometimes we think Fiji is either, well, Bachelor in Paradise or Survivor. Like it's one extreme or the other, but there's a lot of people there that aren't as privileged as we are when something goes wrong. We're quite close to medical care here.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess I want to ask you too, because you're in Victoria right now and Victoria is in stage 4 lockdown. How has that impacted Harcourts and the real estate industry so far?
I think I'll probably merge the answer into one. I think when it first happened, there was that usual energy when it happened the first time across the whole country. You know, what does it mean? What can we do? What can't we do? And it's the 50 million questions of, you know, if this is a scenario, can I do this? And I think a week in, we've kind of, that energy has died down a little bit. It's really clear what we can and can't do. There's not much you can do. And the idea is to stay at home and stay at home for the next 6 weeks. You're allowed out 1 hour a day. I think the biggest focus for leaders and managers right now, for those of you who are in Victoria, has to be on the mental and emotional well-being of our people. So, you know, we're constantly talking to our leaders around how often are you connecting with people? Is it 2 or 3 times a day? What are you doing to lighten the mood? Are they keeping healthy? Are they keeping well? Are they going outside? You know, because no point in bringing employees back into the workplace who are not well, not being sick from the virus, but they're not emotionally well. And none of us have had holidays. You think about it. I don't know about you, Sam, but I haven't been on holiday since this year started. And a lot of our teams are in the same place, and this is becoming a grind. So I think before you start worrying about your business plan and your turnover and everything else, I think the first thing we need to assess is our people's emotional well-being, and then the business comes is a secondary question after that.
Yeah, because I think one of the things you and I talked about a couple of weeks ago is that it's so personal for everyone. You know, everyone's level of risk in this is quite different. So someone, for example, who's a business owner absolutely won't want to get sick, and somebody who is, you know, I was talking to my hairdresser the other day and she's like, yep, I'm not worried at all. I'm living my life. Obviously based in New South Wales, but there is a big difference,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there is a difference. And I think, you know, like in Melbourne, there have been 50-year-olds and 30-year-olds who've died from the virus, and that kind of sort of makes you go, oh, God, it's not just an old person who's going to die from this. And you're right, people are all very different and they're all going to deal with it very, very differently. And I think the hardest thing for leaders right now is to understand how that individual in your business is going to deal with it. So constantly asking the questions, are you okay? How are you feeling? What did you do today that gave you some joy? They're really important questions for us to ask our team at the moment.
Yeah. And what about, because you're right at the coalface in property management leadership as well, how are things going from the point of view of tenants in Victoria? Are they still doing okay, or is that starting to present a few complications? Like, how is all of that feeling at the moment?
At the moment, it's pretty much okay. I think our biggest risk at the moment in terms of tenancies is that a lot of tenants are now looking at their rental rates that they're paying. So they haven't been tied into a lease. We're starting to see an increase of tenants moving into cheaper properties because they were available, or ringing us up and saying, you know, the guy next door rented his house $10 less than what I did. Can you give me a rent reduction? So that energy in the beginning around rent reductions and tenants being on JobKeeper or JobSeeker, I think, well, that has died down at the moment. Now they're looking at the bargains. And, you know, the government's talking about extending JobKeeper and JobSeeker and reducing the amount. My concern is, we come out of this 6.5 weeks from now, or 7 weeks, whatever that looks like, there are going to be a number of businesses who do not recover from this. And a lot of those businesses will be who our tenants work in. And my concern is in the next couple of months, we may see we will see a higher rate of unemployment, which will then directly impact our rentals and our tenancies and expose our landlords a little bit as well.
Yeah, it's interesting actually, because in Sydney, you know, like we've been walking around and it's odd places that are closed that we thought would never be closed. Mark has a theory. He reckons they're cash businesses that couldn't claim JobKeeper. But
probably right, you know, and we probably didn't realise there were cash businesses.
Yeah, it's really interesting times for sure. So we're going to do the leadership diaries today, Sadhana, but I thought we might have a talk about leadership in general first, because you are one of, I guess, the most high-profile leaders in the real estate industry. Was leadership always on your mind?
That's a good question, and thank you for the compliment. I don't know if that's 100% true, but I'll take it. Was leadership always on my mind? For a long time, no. I made the decision to move into this arena, and I say this all the time, after I got divorced. You know, I got divorced, I moved to Sydney for a little while, which is where you and I met. And it was post that I suddenly realised that if I wanted to be successful and be financially independent, I needed to be very serious about my career. And it was at that point I made the decision that I wanted a career where I wanted to be a leader. I wanted to lead a business. I wanted to be successful, you know, create environments where people wanted to work in. So there's a whole range of things that I made a decision around that. And then it was, how do I do that? What skill sets do I need? What people do I need to put around me? What businesses do I need to work for? I became very, very selective in the brands. Who are the leaders in those brands that I need to surround myself with? And also outside of real estate, who are the leaders that I respect the most? And what are the qualities about them that I respect? And do those qualities exist in me? And how do I work towards those qualities? So there were a whole range of things. I actually don't believe, Sam, that leaders are born. I think we all make a decision somewhere along the way in our life to be a leader, and then we work really hard to be the leader we want to be.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, that was a question I had down for you. Actually, do you think leaders are born or made?
No, okay, look at Gandhi and you kind of go, you know, an amazing man, was he born or made? I think he was made. I think he was made because of the circumstances he was in and he was born into. So I think we're made. I don't think we're born into it.
Yeah. And some people might sort of look at you and go, wow, she's so confident. She's not afraid to rattle cages. She's not afraid to shake the tree. I know I have on occasion, like, because you just seem fearless to me. What advice would you give to young women in the industry who are looking to take a leadership role?
You know what? I think the older you get, the more you don't give a shit about things. But, you know, I take myself to 20, 30 years ago when if I'm speaking to a younger woman in the industry and you doubt yourself, you have the imposter syndrome, you question whether what you believe, what you say, the direction you want to go in is the right one. And I think the advice I can give these women is you've got to trust your gut instinct, number one. Number two, if you really believe in a direction you want to head in or a decision you want to make, then facts and numbers are your best friend. I always used to say to people, show me the numbers and that will probably get you a foot in the door. So stick to facts and numbers, and you need to take the emotion out of it. I think we as women may tend to make more decisions based on our emotions, and you've got to learn to balance that out. Trust your gut, yes, have your emotions in there, but get your facts and figures right, because that's what's going to make the difference.
Yeah, that's actually good advice. So, you know, trust your gut, but have the evidence to follow through with it. Okay, leadership diaries, are you ready?
I'm ready.
What was your first job and what did it teach you?
My first job was reception, and it taught me that I don't have to be 100% good at everything that I do, because I wasn't really good at it, but I still got a promotion.
What does the first hour of your day look like and how does it go after that? Are you like a 5 a.m. clubber?
No, because I hate getting up in the morning, but I have learned a long time ago that when I get up, I don't look at my phone straight away. It's the 8 to 10 minutes that I spend reflecting, thinking, anything but work and social media. I have a gratitude journal that I write in every day. So I have three things that I am grateful for, and it is only after that I turn my phone on and look at what my day is going to be like.
Yeah, fantastic. That's a great routine. Can you name someone that has had a big impact on you as a leader?
I've been very privileged to work with a man by the name of Gilbert Anoka. He is the mind skills coach of the All Blacks, a very successful team. Gilbert was our general manager when I joined Harcourts, and he still is on our board. And he, if there was one person who's had a huge impact on my leadership style, it has been him.
What was one of the great lessons from him? Because there's so many, you know, from legacy and things like that, books like that.
I was going through a pretty tough time at one point, and he sat me down for breakfast and we were having a conversation, and he said to me, "You've got to master the system and find a way to make it work for you." And it was one of my Mr. Miyagi moments where I kind of sat there and pretended like I knew what he meant but had no idea, and then went away and really reflected on the words and what was happening to me at that point in my life. And he's absolutely right. You know, we all work in a system, whether the system is your business, whether it's your home, whether it's your culture, whether it's society, it doesn't really matter. And what we've got to do is master it and then find a way to make it work for us. And that one piece of advice has helped me through many, many different situations.
Who are you learning from right now?
That's a good question, because at the moment we're all stuck at home. So I am doing a lot of podcasts at the moment. I'm really enjoying, Julia Gillard has a podcast at the moment, which I'm listening to. Brené Brown's podcast I'm listening to a lot. She has some amazing leadership tips. And then I'm reading some books. Indra Nooe is someone who I find really fascinating. She was the CEO of Pepsi. Really, really different style of leadership. She's another Indian woman as well. So from a cultural perspective, I'm really connecting with a lot of things that she's doing. So they're probably the three things that I'm doing at the moment.
Where do great ideas in your business come from?
Outside of real estate, a lot of the stuff that I do in my business comes outside from real estate, and they come from listening to podcasts, reading a book, having a conversation. And I think one of the great skill sets I do have is taking an idea that's outside of real estate and turning it into a real estate concept and then implementing it.
What's your favourite question to ask someone in a job interview, and what does the answer tell you about the person?
Why should I employ you? And what that tells me about the person is, have they actually thought about what they would be doing in the job? Should we give it to them? A question I like to be asked by the person, which I think is equally as important, is, tell me why you wouldn't give me the job. And I say that to everybody I talk to who's going for an interview. Ask the question, is there a reason why you wouldn't give me the job? Because it actually, in reverse, makes the interviewer start to think about, why wouldn't I give that person a job?
It's the trial close.
It's the trial close.
Does that work in property management as well? Is there an equivalent? Is there any reason you wouldn't sign up with me as your property manager today?
Yeah, absolutely. It's exactly the same thing.
Interesting. There you go. There's a really big tip. What is one characteristic you think every leader should possess?
Boy, I wish I had these questions up front. There's a lot being spoken around, and Brené Brown talks about a lot of this around authenticity and vulnerability. And for me, I wrap it up in humanity. I think in leadership roles, you've got to lead from your heart most 99.9% of the time, and you've got to be able to show your people your human side. And that is, you've got to be or bring all of yourself to the table. So for female leaders listening out there, that doesn't mean you blend in to be like a male leader. I'm a big believer that you must bring all of yourself to the table, including your uniqueness, because your uniqueness is what adds value to the business that you are working in. If you are going to try and blend yourself in to be like everybody else, there's nothing left about you that's unique anymore.
You would then, I guess, question the concept of leadership, wouldn't you? Because the very definition of leader is someone who stands out.
Yeah, exactly.
That people want to follow. How do you get a new employee or team member to understand the culture of your business?
The best way is often to have others in your business actually teach them. However, if you're starting a new business off, which a lot of us are doing, or you're a fairly new business, as a business owner, you've got to get in the front line with them. You've actually got to be in the trenches with them. If you want them to do something or to behave in a way or to treat your clients in a way, then you've got to be in the trenches with them. Pick up that hard phone call, make the call, make the decision, like in my business, I pick up the phone. When I can hear my team are really busy or something's happening and they're talking to clients, I'll pick up the phone. And a lot of the times our clients are really surprised that the business director is picking up the phone, and I just go, well, nothing's beneath me, because that's the way I impart the culture in the business.
Yeah, that's just what you do, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to love the answer to this question, I know. What is the worst advice you've ever heard given to someone starting their career in real estate? I knew you were going to laugh. I knew you were going to laugh. There's so much of it, I know.
Oh, my God, where do I start? Well, usually it's, you know, there's the phone, there's the manual, make your phone calls and off you go. Or, you know, there's a diary with all the training guides and book yourself in. Go and talk to Bill. He'll tell you what to do. Prospecting, I want you to go and door knock the next 30 streets for the next 30 days kind of stuff. And there's no managed process induction.
I mean, that's changing slowly but surely, but it's still a thing out there in some places, isn't it?
It is still a thing. And look, I mean, I joke about that. I think a lot more companies now are far more professional than that. But when I started in my day, literally it was, I remember, and I'm not going to mention any names, but I remember one day when I first started in one of my jobs, the director walked in and he threw the newspaper on my desk and he said, all those owners that are private landlords, call them. And I want you to have appointments by the end of the day to go and see them to list their property. Okay, what do I say? But here's the paper, here's the phone, that's what you need to do.
Yeah, your classic interruption marketing.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. And you're still here to tell the tale.
I'm still here to tell the tale. Clearly I made the phone calls and got the appointments.
Something worked. Is there anything you're afraid to do or would do if you weren't afraid to do it?
My problem is I don't have fear. And sometimes it can be a problem because I can find myself in situations where I kind of go, gee, if you just thought about it a bit more, you wouldn't be here. How are you going to deal with this now? I don't like putting blockers on myself, whether it's through fear, whether it's my own glass ceiling or somebody else's glass ceiling. I will have the conversation and I will have the debate with the individual. Or try, you know, Gilbert just said, you can't go over it, you can't go under it, you've got to go through it. And that probably is my attitude. It's very little that I think the only thing I fear is death, because that's it.
Yeah, that's a good fear to have, because that means that you maximise your time here as much as you can. And I think that's probably good advice for all of us.
Well, I mean, I intend to live till I'm 100, so I'm only halfway through my life, and my kids are horrified when they hear that. And I always threaten them that, you know, I'll be the old woman in the old home that they've put me into, still chasing people down the corridor kind of stuff, demanding to have what I want to have, you know. And I think you've got to, but I see a lot of aged people. My parents are old, and I see a lot of aged people who get us to a certain point in life and think that life now needs, you just need to stop living your life. And I think that it's almost like society has bred that into us. And I don't know. I think if you fear things, you stop yourself from doing it. And what's the worst that's going to happen? It won't work. Nobody's going to die. It won't work, you know. So, and you might learn something along the way. I mean, the biggest thing people fear is failure, right? But doesn't failure teach you so many lessons? So if you stop yourself from doing something, you're never going to learn the lessons.
Yeah, exactly. That's the best way to learn, is to do it and fail and then try again.
Yeah.
Everything's a test till it's not, right?
Exactly.
What does leadership look like at home?
The person I bring to the business is the person I am at home. There's a lot of laughter in my house. I don't feel the need to make a decision about everything, and I don't do that at work either. I love to delegate. I'm often accused of the only thing I don't delegate is breathing, which is probably true. So leadership for me at home is about fun and laughter and balance. If you want to go out and do something, my partner wants to go surfing on a Sunday, go surfing on a Sunday. You know, there's none of that clock on, clock off, permission seeking type of environment. I'm quite easygoing and we have a good blend. I am fiery. I can go off like a rocket. People who know me know that, but it only lasts for a few minutes and then everything goes back to normal again.
Yeah, it takes all kinds, you know, so, and we all even each other out in some way, so.
COVID is testing us though. You know, we are in each other's company more than we've ever been before. My kids have all moved out of home, so, you know, we're empty nesters. And it is testing us probably more than it has done before, but we're managing through it at the moment.
I think I could say the same thing. I mean, you know, COVID has definitely, I think, strengthened my relationship and, you know, it's probably challenged others. But what do they say? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Makes you stronger. That's right.
Absolutely. Okay, so one last question. If someone were going into a leadership environment for the first time, what advice would you give them?
If you're going into a leadership role for the first time, you need to surround yourself with good mentors to start off with. People who are in your corner, who you can go to when you hit situations that you're not sure about how to handle. Because if you're new in leadership, you're going to experience that a lot. So get someone in your corner who's going to be in your corner genuinely and will support you and give you the advice. The second thing that I would suggest to you is whoever your stakeholders are, so you're going into a leadership role, you're going to have a whole bunch of people that you are leading who are your stakeholders, get to know them, understand what is it they want from the business, from you, ask them, if you were doing my job, what would you do? Before you start making any decisions, spend at least 90 days getting to know the business, getting to know the people, understanding what the people want that you are leading, assessing the team that you are working with and managing. Are they the right people? Are they the right team? And have people in your corner, like your own little mini board, who are going to support you and advise you what it is you're trying to achieve. And then all the business stuff, have a vision, have a plan, have a business plan, have accountability, KPIs, reporting, measurements, all that sort of stuff, but the other stuff on the front end.
Yeah, so don't do things quickly, assess first.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think they've got to go into a role in a business and start hitting KPIs, achieving numbers, accomplishing things, ticking off boxes. That's probably the worst thing you can do. There's a great book, I think it's called The First 90 Days, and it is about what do you do when you get into a job or a leadership role. And it is for 90 days, you sit there and you learn and you understand. In return, when you employ someone too, ask them what they think about your business when they first start within the first 4 to 6 weeks, because they see your business through very new eyes and they will probably give you some really good ideas on what you're not doing or could do better.
Yeah, that's really, really good advice. Well, Sadhana, I have, you'll be relieved that was the last question.
Thank God.
And you did really well, and it's been amazing to be able to turn the tables on you. For those of you, Sadhana's podcast is called Without Edges. Check that out. Actually, there is one last question.
Oh, it's
a question I ask everybody. If there was one thing that you'd like people to remember from some of the advice that you've shared with us today, what would it be?
Probably the leadership one is to bring the humanity, all of yourself, so the vulnerability and the authenticity to the table, and lead with your heart and kindness. I think that gets you much further in life or as a leader than anything else does.
Yeah, absolutely. Good advice. It's been amazing talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. That was a fun experience. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Elevate, with thanks to connectnow.com.au. Don't forget to download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts. Visit eliteagentelevate.com.